The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed's sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Okay, guys, we're going to start this week.
Wait, why? Luke's starting the episode.
Yeah, why are you starting the episode?
I'm doing an episode.
Hold on. This is my job.
Nope. Not anymore.
You've been demoted.
Wow.
To Luke.
Oh, gosh. Disgusting.
I am not a downgrade.
Wow. Come on, let's be real. Yeah.
We're going to start this week with a Wii email. A Wii review.
You can't even do it right. It's a Wii review. Let's go. Which one is it?
This lovely Wii review comes from Jasper.
Is it typed like that? How do you type that?
J-A-S-P-E-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R-R.
Or what? I thought so. Finish your sentence, Luke.
Jasper says, I normally hate podcasts. Off to a good start there with Jasper. Mm-hmm. Because my ADHD makes me forget to pay attention and I just zone out for an hour. But Sci Guys is the only podcast I've found that actually keeps my interest and I've learned a lot from it. So thank you.
Sci Guys Cures ADHD, you heard it here first.
I didn't get a word of that. I got Sci and Guys.
Let's start the show. Hello, welcome to the Sci Guys, the show where we talk about the crazy, weird, and wonderful stories from the science world. I'm Corey, and as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Jamp and Luke Cupford.
Hi.
Hi.
This week, we're talking about linking our brains with Big Daddy Musk.
See, I know what this is about, but that's the worst way to describe it.
Is this about Elon Musk's Neuralink thing that I've been hearing about?
Indeed.
A brain chip.
Well, good thing I know nothing about this.
Do you not know anything about it?
I know it's called Neuralink.
Okay.
I mean, you can probably guess what it is from
that. I can guess what it is, but I don't want to guess.
Okay. Well, anyway, so this week we are talking about Elon Musk's one of his many side projects. Now, a little bit of background on Elon Musk, just in case you've been living in a cave.
He's a tool.
He's what?
He's a tool.
Yes.
Not very nice.
Sometimes even if it is true. A little insufferable. Yes.
And if you've been living in a cave, he'll probably call you a pedophile.
Oh.
That's true.
Yes. Very well done.
Well, no. He'll kill all the people who want to rescue you from the cave, a pedophile.
No. The people who succeed in rescuing you from the cave.
The people who beat you into rescuing you from the cave.
So a little background on Elon Musk, just in case you are in need of rescuing from a cave by a pedophile.
An alleged pedophile.
Sorry. God, I'm getting sued. Oh, God. Elon Musk became a millionaire at 28 after selling a company called Zip2. Now,
what happened to Zip1? I'm sorry.
I think the point is that you zip somewhere because it was a city guidance software. He sold that for $60 million, which you may not know. Most people would have thought he got famous off one of his later contributions, which was PayPal. So he started a company called X.com, which was an online bank, which then merged with PayPal and sold to eBay, earning him roughly a nice cool $250 million.
Oh my God. I didn't notice that much.
It's a lot, isn't it?
One of the other...
It's not much for PayPal, though, is it?
Well, that was his share.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the other creators of PayPal then went on to fund Donald Trump's campaigns. So great job, Elon.
Which one is worse? That's the question.
He then launched his space company, SpaceX, which you may have seen a lot of in the news.
A lot of.
For being able to launch a space rocket and then land it on the ground again and reuse it. Then he became CEO of Tesla. He also is involved with SolarCity, a solar power company, Starlink, that are putting the internet in the sky, which you can see from the floor every
and you can
90 minutes.
See that in a clip from our live shows.
Yes,
if you'd
you
like.
Can.
Yes, you can.
Yeah.
And the Boring Company.
Oh, yeah.
OpenAI, Hyperloop, and the Future Life Institute. But today, we are talking about Neuralink. So
these are all different companies?
Well, some of them are projects within companies.
Because I thought they were all under... I thought these were all under Tesla.
Right.
And I also thought that he made Tesla.
No. So he didn't actually make Tesla. So he started SpaceX.
I'm learning
Tesla
so much
was... He was involved in Tesla and invested heavily in Tesla and became its CEO. Starlink is part of SpaceX. The Boring Company is a separate company. OpenAI, I don't know. Hyperloop, I think, is part of the Boring Company. And I hadn't heard of the Future Life Institute until I did my research today.
Right. Because the Boring Company are the ones that made the flamethrowers.
Yes.
Hold on. Are they flamethrowers? Have you got to say that
they're not flamethrowers.
No.
Disclaimer. They're not flamethrowers.
They shoot fire.
They just throw flames.
We don't have to say they're not flamethrowers. That's a customs thing for him. We can very much say those are flamethrowers.
I mean, they quite literally throw flames. There's no two ways about it.
I classify it as a flamethrower,
so,
personally.
Neuralink.
It's a water gun. You just don't fill it
water
with
thrower.
Gas.
How
don't
do you do this? Is this what I do every week? I'm just having my own conversation with James whilst so you try and do a show.
I'm having a conversation with Corey.
It's so hard to not interrupt, honestly.
Neuralink.
Yeah.
Do either of you know anything about Neuralink?
It's called Neuralink, and it's something to do with your brain.
Thanks, Jem.
I know that much, and potentially some more.
Okay, so would you like to provide any more, or would you like me to provide more?
If you pass me your laptop, I'd be happy to provide. It's brain chips, isn't it? He wants to link you in with a chip in your brain that can connect to, like, I don't know, the internet or stuff.
Sort of.
Or some, I don't know what it's, I didn't read into
so
it,
what
to be honest.
Describing there is the kind of things he talks about as, like, possible future one day scenarios. But what he's created so far is called a brain computer interface, BCI for short. And it is a direct communication interface between a computing device and the brain. Fairly obvious from the name of it, which bypasses the need for the body generally. So what that means is that the signal directly goes from the brain to the computer, and in some cases back from the computer to the brain as well, which is writing rather than reading, which we'll get into later.
We might have already done an episode on something like this, I think.
Really?
Yeah, it might have been a bonus episode, but remember the man whose legs didn't work, and then they put a chip in his brain. I think it was a chip in his brain.
Right.
And then they made him legs that moved.
Brilliant.
That was a while ago.
It was a while ago, yeah.
Good memory.
What you're alluding to there is the fact that this is not new technology. Now, Elon Musk launching Neuralink very much makes it seem like this is new technology because it's got all the... It's kind of like when Apple launch a phone with a new product.
Yeah.
And they have popularized it and they have honed it and potentially made it better and commercialized it and given it scale, but they might not have invented the underlying technology.
Saying Apple didn't invent the phone? I thought they invented...
You're saying they didn't invent the Apple?
They didn't invent the letter I?
I'm sure they did.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, because otherwise... Yeah.
Where else would I call myself before Apple invented the letter I?
Me.
Okay, yeah.
What did me call myself?
They revolutionized the English language.
The thing is about the brain chip from before, to be fair, it was really... If you remember our episode, and if you don't, you can go and watch it.
I don't.
Genuinely,
I don't
either.
Which is why I'm reminding you. It was very, very limited. They couldn't... Like, I think it would burn out if they tried to make it do too much stuff.
Right.
And it could it was very simple things they had it doing.
I see.
Yeah.
So with a brain-computer interface, basically what you're trying to do is you're trying to bypass the need for any other interface. So for example, we would normally use, say, the eyes or our fingers or our ears to interface with technology. So we would type, we would hear, we would see. And research in this area has been going for over 40 years and started at the University of California. But the true breakthrough of this with Neuralink is streamlining it, eventual commercialization of the technology, as well as sort of stimulating the public imagination of the possible applications of this. Mm. Elon Musk says, for example, one day it could cure everything from paralysis to blindness.
Whoa.
Yeah. And actually, that's a small claim based on the possible future applications of this.
No, it's very straightforward. In fact, what it could do is make us all brains in jars.
That it also like could do.
Could do that.
That's a head in the jar. But Futurama.
Yeah. Mm. Well, so, Futurama is slightly... Sorry.
No, carry on.
Futurama is like... Groening predicted something else.
Futurama is a step back. So it's like a brain in a jar means that you don't need to interact with anything at all. Mm. Whereas you're like a head in a jar, you've still got your eyes and your ears and stuff. You just, you know, if you have a brain in a jar, then everything can be going directly into your brain. Mm. And you wouldn't even need a world to live in. You could just generate one.
Sounds great.
Yeah. Scary.
I want to get there.
You could be there already. You don't know.
Oh, no.
Luke, would you like to continue?
Yeah. So as Corey's sort of alluding to here, while this is right now being targeted as a potential fix for some disabilities and some sort of issues with your spine or your brain, this is essentially like basically opening a pipeline between the data in your brain and the outside world or the computers that you're trying to use. And like with any pipeline, it can be used for other things. So, for example, the internet was invented with the intention of being a pipeline for data between different scientific projects. And now you're using it to listen to us, which, to be fair, isn't too far off a scientific project, but it also transfers cats to you and...
Not physically. I want to make that perfect. Like, not yet. We've not got to the point of 3D printing felines. Yeah.
Not far off, though.
Well, if we can
print human tissue, I think.
Yeah, I think, well, that's slightly
printing
different.
Printing meat as well, like lab-grown meat.
That's slightly different. Well, it's yes, but it's slightly different. Mm. You'd need the raw materials to do it in your house, and also a very expensive meat printer. Which, yes. if you've got any experience,
not realistic for the average household.
Yeah, no. I mean, if you've got experience with normal printers, you know they're a pain in the ass.
I know. I'm always running out of ink.
I know exactly.
I don't know how to replace the ink.
And you run out of meat. What do you do then?
Go to the shop.
In. I mean, I guess. Yeah. Put your hand in.
Oh no.
So we'll take a little step back now. I've sort of given you a little bit of the overview of like what the idea is. Corey's taking a very helpful step back there. Thank you, Corey. Thank you very much.
You're
for
welcome.
That. James, Corey, not Corey, actually, because you have a degree.
I am not Corey.
Not Corey.
James, do you know how brains work?
Does anyone know how brains work?
That's also true. Nobody knows.
I surely don't.
Do you know the basics of how we believe currently brains work?
The basics.
We spoke about this a couple of weeks ago.
Well, James, think back to a couple of weeks.
There's neurotransmitters. There's neurons. There's brain cells.
Indeed. Neurons are brain cells. Yeah. But yes, there are neurons. And neurons communicate via spikes of electrical signal between synapses and between each other to sort of transfer, we think, information, although we don't really know what they're doing.
What is information?
But it's probably information of some kind.
I mean, it has to be information.
Could of some just kind. Tickles.
No, but that's still information. Like any...
I'm going to say that next time I tickle you, yeah. Which is never.
But it is. But tickling is information, isn't it?
Yes.
Everything, like information is quite literally. Like,
I want to get a t-shirt.
Can be anything.
No, but like, yeah, like information. So like binary stuff, it can be information. It can be like pointless or useless, but it's still like, what's data, I guess, you know?
It contains an amplitude. It contains, yeah.
Yeah, that is the information. Yeah, so that's the information that you're sort of transmitting.
Everything is information.
Everything is information. Well, to humans, yes, everything is information.
Well, that's also the basis of Luke quantum gravity, I think, off my cursory understanding of Luke quantum gravity, is that eventually everything's information.
Mm.
Ooh! Ooh. But basically, because neurons use electricity, and we also use electricity quite a lot. There's a lot of it going on in this room.
There's a lot. And feel the buzz.
Just to run this podcast.
The number of lights in this room, unbelievable.
Brightens us up.
Because neurons are using electricity, that means that we can read basically the contents of the neurons of the brain. If we are able to get some kind of probe into or close to the neurons, we can read the firings of the neurons, and we can also write firings back. So this is what I mean by read and write. In the same way that when you put a memory stick in your computer, you read the electrical signal coming out of the memory stick, in order to read the data, and you write to it by producing an electrical current that goes back through the memory stick and writes data to the drive. Now, we can kind of figure out what some of these signals mean. So, for example, if I were to wave my hand or if I were to think about maths or something, you could do... currently, we have like an MRI scan where you can look at which areas of the brain... With MRI scan, I believe it's blood flow, is it?
I can't say off the top of my head.
So with an MRI scan, we can image certain areas of the brain and see what's lighting up when we do certain things. So, for example, you might show somebody an image of a dog, and then you can look through an MRI scan, or in this case, a brain-computer interface, and you can see which areas of the brain are lighting up with... it might be blood, it might be electrical signals, and then you know that those... That those areas have something to do with, for example, if you're looking at a picture of a dog, they have something to do with either dogs or with the way that the brain processes images or with the memory of dogs or some kind of, you can get some kind of vague picture out of that. And so if you can find what electrical signals go off when you wave and somebody has lost an arm, that either they weren't born with an arm.
I don't know where it is. It's gone.
Where'd I put it? Bloody arm.
Oh, every day I do this. Where is it?
Left it at home.
There it is.
Oh, under the sofa.
Think about the one weird future where you can go on like the Find My iPhone app. Find My Arm.
But how do you type it in? That's the question.
If your other arm.
But if you've lost both of them.
Toes. Brain computer interface.
Yeah.
You think about your arm and it starts beeping.
It would be better.
Thank you,
if
Elon.
It just did the, you know, the Addams Family thing where it popped up on its head. It just walks towards you. No, but to be fair,
I want my arm.
Losing an arm is something that people can literally do right now. With, I mean, I say, you know, prosthetic arms and bionic arms.
Yes.
You can, I mean, I say you'd lose it. They cost a lot of money, so I doubt you would lose them. But it is possible.
Yeah.
To lose an arm.
And also, as we've sort of stressed before, this isn't new technology. There is already bionic arms. They are able to have some primitive understanding of your intention.
You say a primitive? They can tie shoelaces, turn lights on and off.
Really?
Well, I don't think the thing is.
No, I think they execute the program.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Shoes.
I can't think. I don't think it's like quite literally. I think the light switch is actually the light switch. I think I think the tying the shoelaces is a program that they execute. But either way, that's still quite.
Right.
That's still quite cool.
But to be fair. When you want to tie your shoelaces, you probably don't think about all the individual motor.
As soon as I start thinking about it, I can't tie my shoelaces. I'm like, what am I doing? Oh no, it's like when I'm cooking. If I try and think about what I'm doing when I'm cooking, I can't cook. It just if I switch off, it ends up.
If I think about how I'm meant to chop things, I suddenly can't chop properly anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as soon as you start thinking about it, you can't do it.
So basically, back to the science. We can observe how neurons fire, and we can probe those neurons with electrical probes. And when those certain neurons fire, that correlates with some kind of intended action. For example, lift your arm, or I really like maths, or I'm looking at a picture of a dog, that kind of thing. And this is the kind of first intended use of Neuralink. So Elon Musk said in a stream recently, our goal is to solve important brain and spine problems with a seamlessly implanted device. So what you have is a device that you can basically put in your head and feel and look totally normal, but it solves some important problem in your brain and spine. And the reality is that almost everyone over time will develop brain and spine problems. If you live long enough, everyone's basically going to have some kind of neurological disorder.
Mm. I just thought of a really cool way to make superheroes.
Yeah?
Okay. So, right. Wolverine's got an adamant. He's got like a metal skeleton, right?
Yeah.
Now, I don't want a metal skeleton, but I do want to be strong. So I could just implant what they call it?
Get strong muscle chip.
Yeah, well, basically what I could do is implant like the sort of like hydraulic, I think that's what it's called. Yeah. Like robotic movement.
Oh,
things,
I see.
Like joints and stuff, and like bones, things like that.
You're like a cyborg, but just
like
your
a
arms.
Cyborg. Yeah, yeah, just my arms, my legs, and like all of my other like muscles, like have mechanical bits in there that bend and contract and support stuff. And then I just put a chip in my brain. And then when I think I want to use my arm, boom. I don't need to use my arm. The like robotic arm does it for me. You know, does that make
there
sense?
There you go.
Am I making sense?
Realistic superhero.
I think that's what's... Have you just sort of described an exoskeleton?
Well, it's not an exoskeleton. Well, like an exoskeleton, but internal.
Ah,
an internal
so like a replaceable, like a robotic arm.
Yeah, but inside of you. Like it's so it's bionic. It's bionics because you're using your own. You're still using your own like flesh and blood and stuff,
right.
But you just implant stuff in. Although you'd have to stop metal poisoning. Never mind. Let's just cut this and move on.
I'm sure there's a way to figure it out.
I think there's a way to do it. We have metal implants already.
Yeah, but you got to get them taken out after a while, I think, some of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sad.
Life finds a way.
Interestingly, when Elon Musk says neurological disorder, he lists these as including memory loss, hearing loss, blindness, paralysis, but also depression, insomnia, extreme pain, seizures, anxiety, addiction, strokes, and brain damage. So if we just go through that little list there.
Oh, wow.
You can start to see a really weird picture where you have a very close ability to alter your conscious experience by having an implanted device in your brain. So, for example, if it lists depression as a potential thing that can be cured or helped by this device, I'm assuming, like my extrapolation from that, is that you can have these devices implanted in such a way that they affect your serotonin system, your dopamine system, and can stimulate release of happy chemicals from your brain, basically. And you could just, this thing connects via Bluetooth to your phone. You could just have a button that goes, I want to be happy.
I have an issue with this.
I want to be happy.
As in, I have an issue with the way that this is being described.
Right.
So
by me or by Elon Musk?
By Elon Musk.
My issue with someone could
you
steal
do
your phone.
You're doing it terribly, Luke. Terrible. No. The way that Elon Musk, so blindness, paralysis, makes sense.
Yeah.
Very, like, as in terms of, in terms of sort of the science of this, it's very blunt tool. It's fairly, in the way that we understand it, it's fairly straightforward, you know? I mean, eyes are a little more complicated, but when it comes to brain chemistry, that's something that we don't really understand.
I was going to say, because then it's got to somehow like regulate the neurotransmitters in your brain, especially with like depression and stuff,
yeah.
Right?
So the thing is, it's depression right now. It's not a case of, oh, we know exactly what's wrong with people that are depressed. We just don't have a way to affect it. That's not the problem. The problem right now is we kind of know what's wrong, but also we don't entirely know the exact cause. Otherwise, we'd have better ways of solving it. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So saying that we have a brain chip, and once we've got that brain chip to the point of being able to do whatever, we can fix depression. We need to really figure out exactly what's causing depression first. You know.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I mean, the only thing I would say that potentially might be a caveat to that is that it sounds, from my research, it suggests that all brains are sort of firing in very different ways. It's not so much. It's not so simple as being like, this area of the brain always does this in all people.
Yeah, that your brain is mapped differently depending on how you grow and all of your, it's shaped by all of your experiences.
Exactly. Which means that you can't necessarily come up with, or we haven't yet come up with, a clear understanding of depression.
Well, there,
say,
there are areas of the brain that are generally
correlated,
responsible for specific things, but when you want to be really specific with individual like sort of clusters of neurons that are in control of certain things, there's not a roadmap for every single person.
But what I mean is that exactly, you can't necessarily come up with a generalized theory of why people get depression or what areas of the brain are definitely always involved with depression. But if you have enough electrodes around the brain, you could, for example, you have like, so what you're talking about there is like, we have to come up with a plan, a piece of software that runs, that does this. Whereas you could have a device that you report when you feel quite okay.
Mm.
You report when you're feeling quite positive, and you report when you're feeling negative, and the device learns what area of the brain and your specific brain are lit up during times when you feel okay, and it could electronically stimulate those areas specifically for you on a personalized level to keep you on that level all the time.
Yeah, that could. I mean, the thing is that I can see that potentially working, but it also, like, when you feel okay, it could be because, oh, I'm eating right now. And then they light up those bits of the brain, and you're like, oh, I'm eating right now. And then you're not. You know,
I
like,
feel there, full.
My point is that there could be unseen consequences. I think that Elon Musk...
I don't doubt no, 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 sure that there will be unseen consequences, by the way.
No, I'm just saying, that's why I'm saying that I've got a problem with the way that Elon Musk is framing it, because this is the thing. With this podcast, obviously, it's a way to disseminate science to the people in a way that is not only understandable, but also isn't fantastical and making things seem better than they are. And all too often in science communication, you find that people will say, we might be able to cure depression with this brain chip. And generally, people in the public won't really understand what any of that means. They'll just hear, depression cure that's on the way.
That's why all the headlines always say, we found a cure for cancer.
Oh my God, yeah. We're not...
In mice.
Yeah.
No. It's always bigging it up.
There's no one cure for cancer. You'll find that out very soon. But my point here is that I'm not having a go at you.
No.
I'm saying that the way that Elon Musk has set this up is really irresponsible because it's just...
Like, so, I'm saying don't get your hopes up.
I'm saying don't get your hopes up. Because
I was reading an article that basically was, the tone of it was basically this. And the article, the headline was something along the lines of, Elon Musk has done it again, why I'm disappointed by Neuralink. And basically he was talking about how Elon Musk got him all excited about the fact that the Tesla was going to have fully autonomous driving by 2020. Mm. And that hasn't happened. And
not over yet.
But it's not even on the pipeline to happen because it's not legal for self-driving cars yet. Mm. Or, actually, it is in California, I think. But it doesn't seem that... Basically, this guy seemed like he got really excited and really hopeful, and Elon Musk has let him down, and he feels like this is the same thing. And basically, he's saying that Elon Musk preys on people's hope. Mm. He very much sells you these exciting dreams of the future and then gets hit hard with the realities of it, and it's kind of too late because he's already overpromised.
He should pull an Apple and say, I'm not going to tell you what I'm doing. And then as soon as he's done it, he's like, I've changed the world. See you in another year.
But he likes to tweet too much.
Yeah, I know. He's like
He does like Twitter.
He's like Donald Trump. But if there was like a political
actually has a billion pounds.
Yeah, if there was a political there was like a political compass, right? He and Donald Trump would be on like the same side of it, but he'd be, you know, another quadrant. That makes sense.
Yes.
He's very much the exact same kind of person. He's just educated and also
so he's in like he's in one dimension. You think he's in the same dimension as Donald Trump in one dimension. In different dimensions, he's in different dimensions of Donald Trump.
Yeah, if he was born in the US, he'd absolutely have run for president by now.
Oh, he still might.
He's South African.
He's not
an African-born citizen.
Me.
Yeah. Or you'll get the law changed. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows?
Money can do anything.
But anyway, just to bring us, scoop us back into the story. So there's other things like, for example, seizures, which are electrical storms in the brain, which if you can plant a device in there that can detect electrical signals and can potentially send its own electrical signals, for example, in an inverse manner, like it's an AC current, you could send the inverse current, or if it's a DC current, you could send a negative current. Then you could potentially, I don't know all the science of seizures, but you could potentially stop a seizure before it happens, or stop a seizure mid seizure. Mm. So what's really interesting here is that what's exciting about this technology is not necessarily this specific incarnation of brain-computer interfaces, but the world it opens up, our ability to directly stimulate our brains with electrical signals, just changes our entire conscious experience.
So do you know if it uses magnetic fields or if it actually stimulates directly using electric currents?
Okay.
Does it like induce it or does it actually zap them?
Yeah, okay. So there's not loads of information about this. Now, I'm sure that there are other brain-computer interfaces that will do similar things. Mm-hmm. What I do know about this is that it has 1,024 little wires that are surgically implanted into the brain, and they use what is called electrical stimulation. So I assume, but I don't know because it's not particularly clear, that means that it's a current is causing an electrical, like getting electrocuted. There are videos in the sort of launch video where the wire stimulates a neuron and a whole area around that neuron that has been stimulated lights up, like a whole little tiny city.
Stimulate like a group of neurons rather than a single. Yeah.
Yes. So as far as I can tell so far, it is not. And it's not accurate on the neuron level by any means.
Oh, it couldn't be. You'd have to have, to be accurate on the neuron level, you'd have to have one for every neuron.
Every neuron, which is trillions?
We're not quite there.
Or billions. Lots
of neurons.
So it seems to be what they call electrical stimulation, which I assume means, but there are wires directly implanted into the brain rather than the other way that we often stimulate the brain with electrical fields, which I had done. For example, to fix my brain.
Just for a bit. Just for a bit. Just for it. Popped off to the electrical field generator. Just like, yeah, zap me a little bit.
Just for 30 days.
30 days straight.
Which used induced magnetic fields. However, interesting question, the Neuralink is charged via an electromagnetic field. The battery lasts for one day. And because it's implanted in your brain, you can't plug it in. So you have to basically, like an Apple Watch charger, if you've seen an Apple Watch charger.
Wirelessly charge your brain.
Wirelessly charge your little brain device.
I cannot wait until we have wirelessly charging pillows. Charge while you sleep. Rest your head and recharge your brain.
Don't let Samsung make any of these wireless charging brain shots because they'll probably explode.
I think it's going to be Dreams that's going to come up with it first. You know, like, is it not the mattress company? Like, it's going to be. Yeah. It's not going to be like Samsung or whatever because they're going to make terrible pillows. It's going to be the pillow companies that come up with it.
Yeah.
Jesus. Imagine going to IKEA and getting yourself a
wirelessly charging pillow.
Cheap wireless. Oh, no. I don't know where I put my pillow. I guess I'll have to charge my head on my wireless charger. You're holding it.
So as Good I was Lord. Sort of saying and alluding to, this isn't actually that complex a piece of technology. This specific thing, Neuralink, is it not even in version one yet. As I say, it has 1,024 channels, little electrodes for the brain, which sounds like a lot, but those things can either read or write pieces of data. Now, to put that into sort of some sort of context for you, an iPhone 11 has a camera on it that has 12 million pixels. Each one of those has to send data to and from, from the camera sensor to the iPhone. 12,000 things. Now, obviously, I don't know. I don't want to get too much into the science of how those work, but that doesn't mean it has 12 million little individual wires. Mm. But it's reading 12 million pieces of information, and this is reading and writing 1,024 pieces of information. It is the size of a coin. A large coin, but a coin.
What's the size of the coin?
The Neuralink. The whole device. The size of the
coin.
It
seems really small. Although it can't be too big.
How big are the electrodes then?
Tiny. Really, really, really tiny.
Oh, like tiny, tiny.
Tiny, tiny, tiny.
Are they visible?
The 1,024 are visible, yes. Let me find out the Neuralink.
And they're all spread across different regions of the brain. I mean, how do they get them in?
Ah, well, this is the whole story. Okay.
Right.
Because they have to take off your... What?
Okay. Yeah, so this is the story.
Take your brain out.
So, Elon Musk has said that the system could include as many as 3,072 electrodes per device distributed across 96 threads, each 4 to 6 micrometers in width.
Oh, that's tiny.
So these are really, really tiny. So
it's not visible, by the way.
From a production perspective... From the intricacy of this device, it's incredibly intricate. It's, like I say, the size of a coin. The real sort of incredible invention that they have made is actually not this device. What they have started to develop, I don't know how far along this is, but basically is an automated surgical robot where you can go into hospital and this is performed for you entirely autonomously by a robot in 1 hour and you leave hospital the same day. They drill a hole in your skull. They take out a chunk of skull, the size of the device, and they replace that skull with the device. So I'm not really sure how I don't think it's as hard as skull. So I don't know how that works in terms of, you know, you still being safe and not having people poke your skull open or something.
I hate brain surgery.
Yeah,
Like, do you know when they do like proper big brain surgery? It's like an electric pizza cutter, and they cut. Literally a right. Oh no!
It's like a little spinny saw.
No, I hate it.
And then don't you have to like do something the entire surgery?
Well, you've got to be awake during brain
surgery. Do an activity so they know.
So I think they've had people like play violin if they're violinists.
Yeah,
maybe that's just an anecdote I've heard.
I've seen a video.
But obviously if they hit the wrong thing, if you nick a blood vessel when you're doing normal surgery, they might bleed out. That's bad. But if you nick something in their brain, they could lose function of anything.
Well, on that. This autonomous robot that does the surgery for you uses a process called two-photon microscopy, which uses predictably two photons. Do you know about this, Corey?
I know about photon microscopy, yes.
So two-photon microscopy uses two photons, which allows it basically to image slightly deeper into the brain than one photon microscopy. And this means that the robot can automatically avoid all veins and arteries and implant these tiny little wires inside the brain all on its own.
But wait, where in the brain do they go? Do they not go around the brain? Do they all sit in the one...
Well, it depends on your application. So if you, it depends why you're getting it implanted, basically.
But then, but if you said that it just drills out, it just cuts... Oh, God, I hate this.
Yeah.
Just cuts off a part of your skull.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't not be disgusted when I think about that.
Yeah.
It just cuts out a part of your skull and implants the coin-sized device.
Yeah.
For if it's just straight electrical stimulation, then all of the electrodes will need to be at different points of the brain next to the group of neurons that they're going to be stimulating.
Yes.
So it can't just be at one single point. It would need to be all around.
So you have more than one device. I was going to get into this a little bit later, but let me find it now.
So you don't just go in and get one hole drilled in your skull. You go in and get like five.
Well, how many can you get in total?
It depends what you want. Yeah. It
depends how big your skull is.
I was going to say, how much skull do you have?
Now, I don't know if like one day very far along the line, you'll have one or two devices. And as you say, Corey, they perform open skull surgery where they remove the skull and implant electrodes all over the place. And there's maybe thousands or millions of electrodes.
Just use a cap and induce it.
You look a bit ill.
But the device that they demonstrated to us was in pigs. They brought these three very nice pigs out, and it didn't have any of the capability we've discussed. There was no bionic limbs. There was no, as we get onto potential other weird applications, but the pigs, there were three pigs. One was a pig that had a Neuralink put in and successfully removed and was happy and healthy and perfectly fine still being a pig. One had one Neuralink in and one had two Neuralinks in.
And those two were not happy being pigs. Because they had evolved beyond pigs and wanted to be seen as man.
I've become aware of my pigness.
This is Animal Farm!
And the device we saw was significantly more primitive than the potential use cases we are sort of dreaming about. We saw a device in which the pig, it was connected to the neurons that are connected to the pig's snout. And when the snout touched something, the computer beeped.
Mm-hmm. Beep, beep.
So the pig was going... and touching things, and the computer was going beep, beep, beep. And we could see on a computer a live map of these 1,024 neurons all lighting up or not lighting up, which is very interesting. And it was real time, live, very impressive.
Oh.
But not artificial limbs or connecting the human race via the internet.
We'll get there.
That's getting there, though. Mm. That's good. I mean, if it can sense touch, that's good.
Absolutely. And also they had a video of a device or of an application where the pig was walking on a treadmill. Elon Musk found it very hilarious, the idea of pigs on treadmills during this video demonstration. He had a short pause and giggle about pigs on treadmills. And
they were super late for the Neuralink live show.
Yeah.
They were like an hour late.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
Elon Musk was having too much fun with the pigs on the treadmills.
Oh, clearly, no.
No, just, get all of his giggles out beforehand.
It's just a little aside. It went up to like half an hour, then about 40 minutes. They were like, the live stream just was supposed to start and they just didn't.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they had this pig walking a treadmill and they had a Neuralink implanted in the pig. And based on the signals that the pig's brain was giving off, they were trying to predict where the pig's limbs would be. And they were successfully predicting the position of the limbs based on the signals in the brain. And those were matching the position of the limbs of the pig on the treadmill, which then leads you down the possibility of, for example, replicating a limb. If you can predict the intention of the pig's placement of a limb, then you can move the robotic limb to that place.
Yeah, but if it's on a treadmill, it's walking directly ahead at a certain speed, so...
That's true. You do have a closed system and very little to predict.
You're just predicting the gait of a pig, which is fairly straight. I could predict the gait of a horse. I know how horses run.
I assume, although I don't know, they weren't providing the computer with the way that pigs walk. It was just learned by watching other pigs.
No, my point with this being that this seems like an odd thing to demonstrate when it doesn't really. I mean, maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm not understanding it right, but it seems it seems like an odd thing to demonstrate that we know where the pig's limbs are going to land using the Neuralink.
But perhaps a bit keen to show off.
Yeah, because I just feel like because all animals have a fairly specific gait, so you know which limb is going to move. How precise was it, do you know?
It was sort of each joint. It could correctly predict each joint.
Okay. Was that like running the treadmill or?
Sorry?
Was that like operating the treadmill?
The pig was operating the treadmill.
No, like the speed of the treadmill. Was it like controlling the speed of the treadmill or were they just saying, we know where its joints are?
They didn't go into much detail.
Okay.
This, I'm afraid.
This isn't on you. This is just a really odd thing for for Neuralink to... Look, we can watch. Look.
This is what Elon can do with a lot
of
money.
You see this pig walking? We can tell you in real time how it's walking.
Indeed.
Very useful.
Wow. So now I'm going to get onto some potential future applications of this, starting with the sort of interesting to the very far out sort of world that we could end up in. Whoa. Now, for example, you have the idea of the robotic limbs. A different application could be, imagine you are in a car crash or in some way you break your spine, and that means that you can't transfer information from the brain to, say, below the neck. Very common thing.
It happens.
Or like, not a very common thing, but a significantly common enough thing that we're talking about it.
Happens too many times.
Now, one application of this could be that basically what you've got there is you've got an information issue where information can't get from the brain to its intended destination, being the limbs, the legs, the feet, arms, whatever. Mm. And what you can do is you can put a Neuralink above the break in the spine and a Neuralink below the break in the spine. Assuming it's not a break anymore, you've probably fixed it.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. But, and you can transfer the data wirelessly between those two links so that the data gets to its intended destination, which is just like incredible. Now, I do think this probably already exists in other interfaces.
To be just to be totally clear about this, when someone is paralyzed, that doesn't mean that their legs, like people might say, oh, their legs don't work. Their legs technically will probably work fine. Mm. It's just it's the information transfer that doesn't work. You know, the nerves of they can't transfer information down to the legs. So if you were to stimulate the legs just the same way as if you got like a dead frog or something, if you were to like put an electric current through them, they would work and twitch. It's just the brain can't control them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully.
Well, no, I'm just making that clear for anyone that's listening that doesn't understand paralysis.
And what you talk about there, Corey, about this information, the information that's coming from the brain and going to its intended destination, we have that all the time. We have information in our brains all the time that we transfer. I'm talking to you right now. I'm transferring data, right? And one problem we have with computers is we have an incredibly low data rate. So we have what's called a bottleneck, which is where basically, if you're not familiar, a bottleneck is if you imagine on a road with two lanes and they become one lane, and all those cars are trying to get into what was once two lanes and now they're in one lane, and you get the shape of basically a wine bottle where lots of stuff is trying to get into a very small place.
I think it's really, really interesting that to describe a bottleneck, you used you could have used a bottleneck.
Yeah, sorry.
I think congestion's a nice analogy.
No, it's a good. No, it was a really good analogy. I just realized. Like,
I apologize. Yeah.
No, don't apologize.
So we currently have a data bottleneck between us and our computers. So, for example, how do you currently get information into your phone?
I type it or shout at Siri 5 times and then type it anyway.
Oh my god, my Siri doesn't know what I'm talking about.
No idea.
Yeah, no typing. Generally.
Set a timer for 15 minutes. Set a timer for 50 minutes. No, 15 minutes. Set a timer for 50 minutes.
Yours gets kind of close. Mine just turns off.
Yeah, well.
So I don't know what you said.
Set a timer for 50 minutes. Oh, she did it. Good job, Siri.
Great work. Why is your Siri Australian?
I like the sound of Australian.
Mine's South African.
Yeah.
What? But you're Australian and you're Scottish.
I like the sound of Australians. Mm. It's nice to hear her speak like that. I like her when she talks. If she was English, I wouldn't want to listen to her.
Well, the English one is ghastly.
Awful, right?
Yeah.
Continue.
Okay. so the data rate, you have these input devices like typing, like using a computer mouse or whatever, but the data rate is incredibly slow. And with the data rate the other way is fairly high. So you use your eyes through the screen. That's a significantly higher data rate than, say, like your fingers, like how long would it take you to type out all the information in a single frame of a Netflix show, right? Mm. Pictures worth 1,000 words, etc. And we have an information issue just between us. So, for example, we have all sorts of translation layers when we are transmitting information between ourselves. So for example, right now, I think of an idea, and according to our understanding of the brain, that idea lights up a specific order of neurons in my brain which represent that idea, even if we can't necessarily find that yet. Mm. I want to get this information to you, so another part of my brain translates that into a stream of words based on the words that I've learned in the language I'm going to speak in, and only on the words I know. So I have to know the words about the concept I'm trying to talk about. Those words get turned into electric signals, which go down to my voice box, which turns those signals into vibrations that go out my mouth. Those vibrations go through the air and into your ear. Your ear turns those vibrations back into words and turns those words back into electronic signals and back into a connection of neurons in your brain, which might not be the same connection of neurons that I wanted to light up in your brain because of... You might have a slightly different understanding of the meaning of the words I've used, or you might have different interpretations of what I've said based on your life experience, or whether you understood the concepts or the words that I've used to make my point. And that is an incredibly convoluted way of what really we want to do is basically pass my internal state to your internal state. I want to light up your brain in the way my brain is lit up. And it's incredibly slow from a data perspective, and it's incredibly inefficient. So imagine a world in which we have a device in my brain and a device in your brain which are calibrated correctly to my brain and your brain, make allowances and make sort of changes based on to get us to a central calibrated point where I can set up a conversation with you in the same way that I would open a text message, and I can transfer my intent and my thoughts directly to your brain without doing anything external.
I'm hungry. I'm going to go make something to eat. Do you want something to eat? All I need to do is like think, I'm hungry. And then suddenly, automatically, Luke gets a message saying, Corey hungry. Do you want
Corey
food?
Hungry.
And exactly. Luke thinks,
order
as soon as Luke thinks, I'm hungry, I get a message being like, cool, great, I'm cooking for two.
Well, even one step further than that, if I really trust you, I could allow you to probe the internal state of my brain. You could just know whether I'm hungry.
Close weird. Friends.
Mm. Yeah, close friends. Wow, little green ring. So imagine a future. Imagine a future, basically, where...
You go to see a horror movie and instead of it being scary, they just make you feel scared. Oh, that's it. That's it. That's the future of cinema.
That'll be 5D or whatever the next one is.
Yeah, but that really is the future of cinema, though.
That is a really great example, actually, because essentially what a movie's trying to do, like a horror movie's trying to do, is it's basically trying to take you on a roller coaster of emotions. It's trying to trigger a release of emotions in a specific order that are like a bit of a roller coaster to you. And in order to do that, they spend hundreds of millions of dollars to create this visual thing. And instead, you could just press a button and be like, emotional roller coaster.
Whoa!
Wow!
That's the thing, though. I mean, and the thing is, you could put that alongside movies. So the idea is that most art is... The idea of most art is that it's to basically make you feel whatever the creator of that art wants you to feel.
Yeah.
It's a transfer, or a transfer of ideas. So, say, Inception. I don't know why I'm thinking about Inception today. I just am. Inception, they want to get across the idea that your concept of reality, like whether something is really real or not, doesn't matter. It's what you experience that matters, right? Yeah. And I had to sit down and watch a 2.5 hour, a 3 hour film for Christopher Nolan to tell me that. Whereas in the future, I could just have Christopher Nolan send me a little brain chip thing and I'd suddenly be like, oh, that's the idea he's talking about.
Well, you could still watch the film. It could be like, people go to a 2D viewing or a 3D viewing.
Or a 4D viewing.
It could be a 4D viewing. It could be a new 5D thing where you still watch the film, but you could run the risk of misinterpreting the film. You could just plug in, get the exact interpretation that the director wanted.
Yeah, it's like a director's commentary.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really good.
Yeah.
You also have potential eventual applications of this. For example, you think a question, it searches for the answer and provides you the answer. So the whole concept of...
this podcast would go down the drain.
Well, what we need to do, Corey, is we need to set ourselves up to be the server that is requested by Neuralink.
All right, okay, cool. You get on the phone to Elon Musk, I'll start researching what servers are.
Sci Guys Corp, here we come.
And in the ridiculously long term, essentially, potentially replace entire parts of our biology, like in the same way that our memory is getting much worse because we don't have to remember anything because we have
phones.
Is
it actually getting worse?
Well, whether it's getting worse or not, we don't remember things that we would previously have to remember, like phone numbers.
Yeah, but then our memory is probably getting better.
When we have the device that provides all of our memory, yes.
No, but we have more capacity to remember things.
Because so we've externalized our capacity.
Yeah, because we don't need to remember. So like, it's like having an external hard drive. So yes, for all the stuff that's kind of important, but also isn't... it's like an external hard drive. Mm. All the stuff that you need to have day to day, you can save on your computer. If you get an external hard drive, you can move all the old photos and like stuff from holidays and like contact, all of that stuff, you can move it onto the hard drive, and then you can just run day to day what you need to remember. So I think that our capacity to remember stuff has actually increased because... Yes. We don't need to remember all the boring bullshit like what your phone number is.
Sorry, I spoke imprecisely.
No, it's fine. I'm sorry.
And then the sort of one day sort of idea is that in the same way that we are now much more connected to each other because of the internet, like I wouldn't know either of these people because of the internet, one day we could potentially just become a hive mind. Because the only reason why you have a continuous sense of being one thing, for example, when you're actually a makeup of lots of different things, is because they communicate with each other and they have a way to transfer information from each other and they rely on each other. And if we had, we wouldn't have to worry about things like serotonin levels because they're being deeply probed by our brain all the time. And we have... a hive mind where we can access all information at all times, then we could eventually become essentially one gigantic organism from a experiential perspective.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you get rid of the barrier on the internet, like this, I think about this a lot, the fact that the internet is probably one of the most intelligent things out there, in that the internet has not only the combined knowledge of everyone that's connected to it, but also the combined abilities and the combined computational power of not just the computers connected to it, but the people and all the engineers, all of that stuff. So humans as a whole, well, humans as individuals aren't very great. They're not great. But if you send out a problem to the internet, chances are you'll find the answer to it.
Mm.
But the one barrier is the fact that you've got to type and look at a screen or type and look at your phone, which is why people listen to podcasts like this, because they can't
yes.
really, because sitting and listening to something and getting the lowdown on it is much easier than doing all the research behind it.
Much more entertaining.
Yeah, trust me, I know, I do both.
Reminds me of something you were saying a few months ago on the podcast, Corey, about how we think of ourselves as like an advanced race, but we could be, you're right there. Corey just,
you look so short now.
We think of ourselves as an advanced race, but we could be like that one fish that climbed out onto land once, because we're starting the technology to fly out into space and start to have a multiplanetary or system. And that's essentially like what we did when we went out to land.
Mm.
Yeah, or when we started farming. There's so many different points in human history where we made massive changes. And the thing is, I feel like before all those points, people may have thought, oh, this is going to change and it's going to change for the worse. And right now I find myself thinking, well, yeah, getting rid of depression is good, but making your brain chemistry totally normal, I say totally normal as in totally normal all the time, is that really beneficial? What does that mean? Like, it depends what you kind of value, I guess, whether you value just knowledge and progress for that sake at the expense of individuality.
Well, I think it also depends on, and I don't know the answer to this question, but take something like pain, for example. Pain is a perfectly valid response to the world if your body is in danger. In the same way that depression could be a perfectly normal response to the world if you're in a world that makes you feel depressed.
Mm.
Now, we don't know the answer as to whether we have an epidemic of depression because we've created a world that rightfully so people should be depressed about, or if we've created a world that is wrongly triggering the depression response. Now, if we're wrongly triggering the depression response, then great, we should fix that. But if we are creating a world in which depression is a perfectly valid and correct response to have in a central nervous system, then we need to fix that world.
Change the world.
Just stimulate our brains with electricity.
I think the thing is that we exist in equilibrium. You know, and we've kind of bounced back and forth from a mean, a normal mean. And if we decrease the sort of bouncing back and forth to the point where it's just a straight line, then we miss out on all these other things. Mm. So if you're constantly just feeling fine, then I don't really, I don't think that's quite right. Because sadness, because, okay, right, put it this way. Let's say you're grieving and you think, well, I can just alter my brain chemistry to not have to deal with this. That fundamentally changes the way that humans interact with the world. Because yes. you then no longer, you don't need to process anything. Any trauma doesn't affect, you mm. don't, so many things will just will be changed. Like if you implant them into kids, then kids might not learn lessons. Kids might not understand things that they previously would, because we learn through our experiences. And if you funnel down these experiences to be in, to be all fall in line with a particular sort of set of experiences, then you're really limiting where the human race can go. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yeah. Essentially. I mean, I do wonder if that's the same argument that someone might say about, say, well, if we create agriculture, then people won't go hunting.
Yeah.
And you're wiping out an experience.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is, I think that's what I'm saying. I feel like, despite the fact that I'm aware that at every single massive leap, obviously progress happens slowly, but on the sort of bleeding edge, at the precipice of these things, there are people that that are obviously scared of change and say, "Well, I don't think it's gonna work out." I recognize that my brain is sitting there doing that right now, but it's hard not to think of the potential consequences, you know. And I'm not saying that I'm not open to it. I personally don't like a world where there is no individuality. But then it could be the case that individuality is just is a silly human construct that we don't need.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, I think that's a wonderful place to end. The last little couple of points I wanted to make was that, yes, Elon Musk says that you will potentially be able to record and play back your memories like that episode of Black Mirror. And that Noam Chomsky, who is a linguist, says that he doesn't think this will work. He thinks the idea that stimulating like a robotic arm is perfectly valid, but that ultimately science doesn't have any concrete concepts of what thoughts are or what intention is or where that even comes from. And so to think that you can decode that with a computer module is at best, it's too early to say.
To be fair with thoughts, I think you could have sort of thoughts where it'd probably be good for advertising. That's where I can see it going, and it's probably where it would go. Wherein you have a general thought of hungry. We can understand, like, obviously you can map you can track a certain person for, say, a few months or a year, and you can understand, oh, hungry, that's what it is, and they might have to input it on their device or whatever, how they're feeling. And that's how you figure out what thoughts are. But I think I agree with Noam Chomsky, because, you know, we're both very intelligent people. That yeah, Noam and I, we agree on this one. I think that, yeah, the concept of having such specific sort of thoughts of sending you specific thoughts or asking myself a question and that being searched on the internet for me, I think that might not be something that exists in the way that we think it would exist. In the same way that when smartphones when phones were invented, we didn't see the advent of smartphones. In fact, before smartphones were really invented, we couldn't really think of the concept of them existing.
Yeah.
I think there will probably be other bottlenecks within that technology. And I do think that Elon is maybe over-promising a little bit.
Great. Well, that's the episode, guys.
Cool.
Thank you for watching. You can find the full references for this episode in the description. Subscribe for new episodes every Sunday. And why not leave us a nice wee comment? You can support the pod at patreon.com/SciGuys. Find and contact us at SciGuysPod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Or you can send us an email at SciGuysPod@gmail.com. You can follow me at Luke Cutbolt everywhere.
You can follow me at Jamkin everywhere.
I am not Corey everywhere.
Goodbye.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week.
Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.